So I guess the title can be the Buddha at the workplace, the Buddha at work. And I mean, as I said before, the importance of relating to our work is that it uses up so much of our life, and therefore has a very strong power of conditioning and of changing our consciousness. And sometimes it can change, the work is so powerful that it changes our consciousness in ways that we don't even know, and we can't even measure it. And it has a big power. We have to be very aware of it. For example, we may have been going on wonderful retreats and having a wonderful spiritual life, but something keeps bringing us down, and we feel life is not that interesting, and I'm tired, and my meditations are not very good, and it doesn't really work. And we forget that maybe the 24 hours of our life is draining our spiritual energy. Not, and in a way that we can't even detect, because it's subtle. It happens day after day after day, a little bit less freedom, a little bit more struggle, a little bit more resistance, a little bit more tiredness, a little bit more arguments with people, and we don't know that it's happening. And we just know, oh, why am I? I've done all these retreats and I'm feeling so empty and so struggling. And we don't realize that it can be from daily life conditioning, which is very strong. And the Buddha said, work is tiring, dirty, endless, and a struggle. And we can all feel that in the Western world, especially. The Western world gives us a big challenge because everybody works for money, so everybody's measuring all the time. And this pressure to measure how much we get is ki'ilu, that's the motive for working. The motivation for working is what I get at the end of the day in pieces of paper called money. That it's really a difficult situation to be in. The Western world is really in a deep struggle with this thing called work and the bottom line. So we may feel that there was no time, we uses up all our time, maybe we doesn't have so much meaning. It's the strongly conditioning, it's conditioned by others. We work with others that we don't get on with, they argue with us all the time, like you were saying. And there's something there that is sad and difficult very often. Christopher once joked, how many people at the end of their life, when they're ready to die, would, and you ask them what is their regret, karata, they would say, I regret I didn't spend more time in the office, Bamisrad, in front of the computer. So all of that is true, but there is another way of looking at it, completely different way of looking at it, and which is that, as I said before, there isn't such a thing as work. It doesn't exist. There is the moments of my experience, which can be challenging, through which I grow, I develop. It makes no difference if these moments are in the office, or in my house, or by the sea, or on an autobus. Why should it make any difference? If we look at things in this way, then the whole concept work vanishes, and there is just moments of experience. And then it doesn't really matter what we do. And that is a side that we should be aware of. Nisargadatta Maharaj, one of the greatest spiritual masters of the 20th century, spent his working life rolling bidis in Bombay. Bidis? Rolling cigarettes. Bidi is an Indian cigarette. That's his work. He's rolling and selling bidis, Indian cigarettes. And and so in a certain way we have to also understand the opposite, that life happens, things happen by themselves, we find ourselves in different situations, we're not in control, we arrive in a certain situation, that's its experience, my experience in this situation every time, and I have to let go and be with the moment. And then the whole concept, why working life, kind of disappears. And we can become the bodhisattva. We can become heartful, generous, open, and doesn't matter what. And maybe my effort in working in that factory was like trying to be a little bit of a bodhisattva to the workers there as much as I can. One time I was reading an article by a Dharma teacher who said his work is mend computers. Mending computers, and he said, I love my work because I go into houses and meet lonely people, older people often, that are isolated and alone. I come in to mend the computer, but there's not one time when I don't sit with them and talk together, we have a cup of tea, and I bring what I can, a little bit of light into their day. And that's why I really enjoy my work. And I think that it's really important to understand that. I mean, in the Kabbalah, the rabbis in the Kabbalah were told, you have to work. Not on Kabbalah. Kabbalah you study at night. In the day, you've got to work. Be a shoemaker, a carpenter, a tailor, a farmer, whatever. You mustn't study Kabbalah day and night. You only study it at night. And the day you have to work, because work is the meeting point with other people, with the challenges of ordinary life, with your place of growth. So that's another way of looking at it. So let's see in practice how we can sort of develop the wise relationship to work. I think the first thing that comes to mind, all of you will probably be aware of this, is that there is ethics involved in this. In a formal way, the ethics of right livelihood and the Eightfold Path is not to sell weapons, not to sell intoxicating or poisons, drugs that harm people. And not to have a profession that hurts others. But it's a little subtle. It is not clear. For example, there really isn't a prohibition on being a soldier. If you're a householder, of course if you're a monk you can't be, but as a householder, there isn't a prohibition you must never be a soldier. But certainly, what kind of soldier are you? Is more relevant. Are you busy harming or are you helping? And as a soldier you can do a lot of help. And many times people ask me this question, especially in Israel, shall I serve the Tzava or law? And my answer is often the same. You can serve if you have the koach to help and not to hurt. Maybe stopping abuse, for example, saving lives. Maybe other people were going to take a life and you can stop it because you're in the right place to do that. So it's delicate. Of course, you can say, if you're a soldier, you can't disobey the rules or whatever. There's many, these are fine lines. We don't have rules about this. We need development to know what to do and what's ethical. But so it's a very subtle But basically, it's are we helping or are we hurting? Are we mazinim or mazikim? Are we feeding the world or are we destroying? And it can be very subtle. For example, we can be an advertising company, Chevra Shel Pirsum, and what's the kind of message that we express? Are we telling people, like the big sign that I've never forgotten in California for hamburgers, crafted for your craving? I was in California, I was seeing this every day. I used to drive past this huge sign, crafted for your craving, to increase your greed, your craving. This hamburger looks big, hamburger like the size of this room. Are we doing that, or are we, so shtifat moach, are we making people buy stuff they don't really need, so in order to suck money from them and give them and take away from them their life? Or are we using advertising and promotion and so on to actually bring some goodness in the world? Very delicate, these difficult decisions, and I don't want to go into it too much, but just to say this, if we're talking about karma giving us, pressuring us, then here's one place where we have to be careful. We have to be careful because karma works under the skin, in the unconscious very often. So we can be doing something slightly unethical, not wise, not helpful, and it slowly somehow mashu mazahim zatoda'a, contaminates the consciousness a little bit. And so just to be careful about this, just to be aware who's buying what I make, who's selling, who's, what do I support, what views I'm helping to what are the views that I'm supporting in the world, what kind of conditioning I'm doing to others, and so on. One of the best ways of regarding our working life, something that's really helpful, I think, is the parami of dana. If we make the shift in the mind that my life isn't something that I do for myself, my life is given to me as dana, and I am simply giving it on to others. So my working life is a life of dana. And that really shifts everything. The money is not that interesting. Anyway, money is dana. So money comes into your pocket and goes out again. It's classic dana. Doesn't belong to anybody. So it's not for money because it passes through. It's not for anything. Dana is the movement of the heart and the consciousness that means I'm here to be part of the flow of giving and receiving. That's what I'm doing, and that's what my working day is giving to others and receiving. And you can really it really changes everything. You're sitting at the computer or the emails, just think, you're giving your words, meaning your mind and your heart, to others. What is it you're saying? If you have that dana attitude, every word you write in an email is going to be different. You'll be conscious of this email is going out into the world and communicating something. And if the spirit of dana is behind it, then the heart and mind are there, and you say, my life is giving, this email is giving, this moment is giving, this conversation is giving. Helps you in your question of how to cope with it's not only equanimity that will help you in you and many others in arguing with people at work who argue with us and don't agree with us and want to put pressure on us and have our boss that has strong ego and tells us what to do and all of these usual problems of work. But the dana attitude takes away the pressure. We are in the flow of giving. Our life is, and it's very deep. It's not just I am going to work in order to give. It's 24 hours. The dana attitude. In Hindi or Sanskrit, the word is seva, meaning service. It's similar to service. And some of you may know sangha seva means the sangha that gives service, and it's Zohar from Israel and Nathan from the UK and others, Israelis and others, organization in India that help in hospitals for people who have leprosy, and they go and do projects in the community. Seva is very important in the Hindu or the yoga world, that your activities should be service. And it's basically dana. We can look at the same, it's just dana. So you're serving the world through your work, through your activity. And it brings a joy. This attitude of dana brings joy. It's a subtle thing that brings joy into your day. And it makes some meaning to your day. It has meaning. It's worth something. So Dan and myself and others, I don't know if any of you were there, were in this Wisdom 2 conference a while back. Anyone else was there? You were there, Muli? Yeah. So we were at a conference, quite a big conference in Israel about a month ago. And the approach, it was several hundred people in the audience, maybe 400. A lot of business people. And it was about creating a new culture in business. It's kind of interesting to hear maybe a new business model of big companies like Google and Facebook and so on, and others who are maybe they have a slightly different attitude to what they're doing, and they feel a little bit more inspired by this movement of dana. Of course, you can't go too far with that. They're accumulating vast quantities of money that they really shouldn't have. It was, and there's full of tzviut there as well, I must say. But still, despite that, there was something refreshing in listening to some of these companies and the way they are slightly different. I know because I was in teaching in Silicon Valley in South Bay. I was teaching there one summer. So I was really meeting a lot of the high-tech people working for these companies, and they were coming to my groups, etc. And the Dharma teachers and California Dharma teachers go and do serious one-day retreats in Google and in eBay and these big companies. They invite the Dharma teachers to come and not just give a nice, inspiring talk, but actually do one-day practice for the executives and the workers there. So I know that that's happening. And Google has this program called SIY, search inside yourself. And they're doing it all over the world. They're starting these programs called search inside yourself. Which, you know, good for them. I mean, let's face it, when good things happen, it's appreciated, and they're also problematic things as well. I'm not giving it yet. A stamp, chotemet, you're good guys. But I'm just giving it as an example of the way things can be a little different. But also things can be things can be really, really hard. It's true that there's this abuse going on all the time. And my father was in a business in London, and he, at that time, I remember, in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, when he started, and he told me about it, the difference between the amount of money that a manager would receive and a worker was maybe three times. Maybe the manager would take would have three or four times more than... Now it's 30 times or 40 times a manager will have more than the lowest level of pay, including and especially companies like Google and so on. The managers would take billions and the workers still get whatever they get. So, you know, it's still got its problems. But anyway, this is just for you. This Dana attitude is really... kindness works as a way of shifting the mind and heart to making our working life worth it and inspiring and helpful. And at the same time, we should think about all the other paramis. That means qualities. It's more important to think what it is that I learn from this work than if it's easy or not. And the bottom line is, when we come home in the evening, do we feel that we learned something? Have we developed qualities inside ourselves? Echuyot. So whatever we've been hearing, one or two examples, quality, your quality of equanimity is an example that you had to practice. Okay, so we come home in the evening and I'm learning equanimity in this work. Or renunciation, the story of Castaneda, and a little bit your story, Efrat, is renunciation. I let go of what it's doing to me. I've got struggle with, you know, the self and the others, and the dimuits me, and so on. But there's renunciation. I let go. I'll put up with it for the moment. I let go myself. I will, so the renunciation, even though it might feel a little difficult, but plenty of opportunity for reducing the greed and the delusion and so on in the workplace. Of course, mindfulness is crucial. It's the bottom line. Here, mindfulness is essential, because without mindfulness we simply can't deal with the issues that come up with other people that are not practicing Dharma with us. They're just ordinary people that we have to spend all day with, and they can give us hell. And so we kind of, in work, we're married to people that we didn't choose to be married to, kind of. And it's a challenge. And so we need for this mindfulness, a lot of mindfulness. We need to see the anger and the stress coming up in us. We need to know enough to let it go. We need to see how we're suddenly find ourselves bahaganatiyut, defending our views and our opinions. Arguing with others when it's not wise. We find ourselves falling down again and again. It's okay, but if we have mindfulness, this is the, in a way, the medicine to transform difficult experiences in our daily life, and then they become learning experiences for us instead of just pain and a drag. And we do learn through these experiences are sometimes the best ways to learn, and through meeting resistance and meeting opposition and meeting challenge, it's sometimes the best way to learn Dharma and transform. So it's very important, but as I said before, sometimes we just don't have enough mindfulness. And then we can feel the shchika, the tiredness, the conflicts all the time, and begin to feel down, and we lose our trust, and we lose our hope, and we lose our spirituality, our ruchaniyut, and we meditate at home, it doesn't really work, and we feel down, and so on. And that means simply our mindfulness isn't strong enough, like I said before. And maybe then we have to go. And so just to be aware of the sort of dynamic here. Finally, the awaken the Buddha at the workplace is you and I that refuse to accept hierarchies, refuse to accept control, violence, refuse to accept these kind of things, stand up and confront abuse, always allowing compassion instead of conflict. And our awakened mind, as much as we have access to it, the flow of the awakened mind, in a way, we find ourselves transforming ourselves and others in the workplace, because we are active. We're going to be in our eyes. People see us. Sometimes people sort of say, I mean, maybe that's an answer for you as well. People say, "Oh, they're all too strong. They're arguing with me. I don't know. I feel, I feel just like Kamo Akbar, and they're these heavy people. They're my bosses, and this and that." But we do influence. We don't always know how much we affect others. It's not clear. But the Buddha in the workplace is allowing our awakened mind to express itself and stand up and say what we need to say and be kind in times of anger, to not agree with, to be in hierarchy, to not agree of heavy controlling of others, to not agree to abuse by the bosses abusing people under them. And that awakened mind is, as much as we have access to it, will change our work and our working life. And it brings us to what I said before. There really isn't such a thing as work. Then we see there is actions but no actor. There is just things happening by themselves. Our awakened mind will tell us that. And if there's no actor, then nobody can do anything to you in your working place. Nobody can do anything to you because there's no actor there behind. There's no investment in me that I has to be looked after. So as much as this is not 100%, but as much as we have access to that quality of inner freedom, and the actions are happening but there's less me behind them, that will radically transform our working life. It's totally radical, and it will transform others as well. And in a way, that's my own experience, like I said, in this factory. Strange story, but indeed, I had access to the boss of the factory, and I know him until today. Well, he's now 83, I don't know, he's retired, but I do know him. And he appreciated that I used to knock on the door of his cheder menahalim kilu and sort of march in like a chutzpah, because they're with a real chutzpah, And he was having meetings and so on. I would say, hello, how are you? You know, I wouldn't, the secretary would say he's having a meeting. I would say, good, I'm coming in. But they sort of, they allowed me to be a bit wild. Anyway, to be a Buddha in the workplace, big heart, dana spirit, emptiness, chutzpah, be right there with everything as it comes up, and develop the paramis, the qualities. See that the work gives you when you come home in the evening. I learned something today. Yeah, thank you.